It is good to be here. I do feel at home when I come to the partnership churches, because I do feel supported by the partnership churches in my training. As Sam says, I'm on the third year of three, so I'm on the downward hill now, or downhill from here. So thank you, and not least because Charlie is my supervisor, so I've got to pay attention. Anyway, it's nice to be here. Thank you. Mark 10:51. What do you want me to do for you? Jesus asked him. The blind man said, Master, I want to see. Now, I want to start with a little exercise for you this morning. Now, I always, when I'm sat in the congregation and the preacher says, I want to start with you doing something, I always have a bit nervous. The preacher says, and turn to your neighbour and swap clothes with them. But we're not going to do anything like that. We're going to be nice and safe. It's only you, so don't worry. I want to ask you to close your eyes. Don't worry, no one will do anything to you. But I want you to ask you to close your eyes. Now imagine that you've got to go through the rest of your life without opening them again. You're blind. Keep your eyes tight shut. Think about the day ahead of you. Going home at the end of the service, do you remember where the door is? Is there anything in the way? How many steps to the pavement? And what then? Keep your eyes closed. There's someone you want to see before you go. No, don't say see. Someone you want to meet before you go. They're over there somewhere. How do you find them? How many chairs to navigate? One voice in so many. Now you can open your eyes now. The doors are there still. You can get out. And we say, thank God I can see. Well, my mother has glaucoma. And over her life, she's gradually got more and more blind till she is now totally blind. Which means that everyone in the family has more frequent eye tests. And when you get to my age, they're free. Some advantage. But over the years, she has learnt to live with blindness. Her husband died a few years ago, and then she had to learn a whole new load of things that he did automatically for her. And this was quite enlightening. For instance, how did she know what colour her shoes are? Are they even a matching pair? Where's the furniture laid out? What's in this tin? Is it baked beans or peaches? Who's that at the door? In fact, where is the door? Even buying a radio, my mum likes to listen to crime stories on tape and listens to the radio an awful lot. But even buying a radio, try getting a radio with buttons. Now they've got a fancy twiddle dial and an on-screen display that tells you where you are and what you're selecting. All she wanted was buttons. She couldn't go around our village. We live in Oakley. She couldn't go around our village on a Friday. Why a Friday? It was dustbin day. It isn't anymore, but it was dustbin day on Friday. And at the beginning of the day, the dustbins were all nice and neat along the edge of the road. But once the dustbin lorry's been, it's like an obstacle course. She couldn't get around. It was very disconcerting when she came to stay, and I would go to bed, and she'd want to stay up. Well, it's all right, she can get to bed herself. But it's very disconcerting that I switched the light off and left her in the dark. It just somehow doesn't feel right. She didn't need the light to go to bed with, but it seemed uncaring. There's so many things we take for granted. Just one more. Crossing at a pelican crossing. A pelican crossing with a central refuge. How do you know when the beeper goes that it's your crossing that is saying and not the one on the other side of the road? Well, I'll tell you. Underneath the button that you press, underneath the box is a little knob that protrudes. And if you hold on to that, when the green man comes on, it revolves. And so you know it's your crossing and you can go. Now you're all going to go out and find a pelican crossing, aren't you? See, we can see. Or can we? Jesus' healing of blind Bartimaeus gave him back his physical sight. But as so often, the physical healing also symbolizes a deeper healing, an indication to a much fuller sight. You may know H.G. Wells' story, The Invisible Man, or may remember David McCallum's old TV portrayal. But you may not have come across another book also called The Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison. This is actually more scary because it rings true. Set amidst the racial tensions of the USA in the 1950s, the book tells the story of the invisible man. In one sense, he's quite visible, like you or me. It's just that people refuse to see him for what he is. They choose to ignore him, pretend he's not there. He says, "I am the invisible man. I'm not a spook or one of your horror film ectoplasms. I am invisible simply because people refuse to see me. When they approach me, they see only my surroundings, themselves, or figments of their imaginations, indeed anything and everything except me." How often do we remain blind to the things and the people we don't want to see, either ignoring the reality and the needs of others, which are inconvenient and painful? How often, like Nelson of old, we put the telescope up to our blind eye and then scanning the horizon for signs of distress from the needy of the world, we say, "I see no signal." Verse 26 of our Hebrews reading reads, "Such a high priest meets our need." Well, in the midst of the Methodist Church, that priesthood, the priesthood of all believers, it is for us to become involved in the world around us, not to ignore it. It is all of our duty to do that. And if you've looked at the plan this morning, you'll see that this morning is Local Preachers Sunday. So, in an ecumenical sense, that's Local Preachers Sunday, Readers Sunday, Worship Leaders Sunday. It's a Sunday where you are all challenged to look at your own ministry. To look at that ministry and test whether or not you have the calling to be a local preacher, a reader, or a worship leader. We are asked to become involved. What do we want Jesus to do? We have to put our concerns for the people of the world in front of people. Otherwise, the public don't want to see. And when the public don't want to see, the TV news stops covering it. And hey, the problem goes away. I came across this piece. It's called The Warless Victims and is by Ian Smith. It begins with a question: what's it like in Africa? The whole piece is really the African continent's answer to that very question: what's it like in Africa? What's it like in Africa, they said. Imagine two enormous towers, twin towers, if you like, filled with millions of people. People of all ages, blameless people, innocent. A few million with children and other family members waiting down below. And the towers are burning. They are crumbling and collapsing, crushing and tearing people apart. And the TV cameras turn away. And the sound recording machines are turned off. And everyone ignores the atrocity as if it never happened. As if it's not happening now. No one is there to tell us. No one is there to tell us that nothing will be the same again. No one points the finger to say, this will never happen again. No monuments, no international day of mourning, no time for analysis, no ground zero, no stock market crisis. That's what it's like in Africa, they answered. You see, suffering people in the developing world who are neither rich nor Western are not significant news items. There's so many invisible men and women. Bob Dylan sang, how many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. And Jesus, confronted by the blind man, said, what do you want me to do for you? And the man said, let me see. I hope and pray that God will let us see what it is we are being called to do in his name. Of course, as we've seen, blindness can take many forms. We look and yet we do not see. The blindness can be on our doorstep as well as on the other side of the world. Another little exercise for you. Don't worry, you don't need to move. And you don't need to close your eyes. Just try and remember the people sitting around you. What are they wearing? Have they any jewellery? What colour are their eyes? What colour is their hair? Do they have hair? Maybe you got these questions right. But how about these? The people around you, can you see under their skin? Can you see the joy, their joy or misery, confidence or fear, doubt or certainty? How well can you see into your neighbour? Or are we blind to the real person? So I wonder how much there is that we have been missing. That person who we hardly give a thought to. What are their depths of joy and sorrow? And don't forget that in Genesis 1 it says they are made in the image of God. We're all made in the image of God. Have we missed the God in our neighbour? It's so easy to turn a blind eye. A blind eye to the world, blind to those around me. But there's a final blindness. Blind about myself. There's so many kinds of blindness. Inner blindness we inherit from our circumstances and prejudices. The blindness of being lost in a tangle of inexperience. But we can be unwilling to look at ourselves. You can't change the world if you're unwilling to change yourself. And some people are unwilling to change themselves. We all have parts we prefer to keep in some dark cupboard hidden away. And Jeremiah says we should shout for the foremost of the nations and make our praises heard. Now, a lot of us strongly dislike the idea of having to confess to a priest, and with some good reasons in many cases. We can confess directly to God through Christ. We don't need necessarily a priest to intercede. But I wonder how many of us would be really frightened of the confessional, not on the grounds of some high-flown theological principle, but for a much more mundane reason. Because if we had to articulate our sins and our failings to someone else, we have at the same time to admit them to ourselves. Never mind anyone else, we have to admit what we are really like. As Jesus says in John 3, though the light has come into the world, people have shown they prefer darkness to the light because their deeds were evil. Everyone who does wrong hates the light and avoids it for fear his actions should be exposed. 1 Corinthians says we now see in a mirror dimly, but then we will see face to face. And so, back to our reading. Jesus comes walking into the light. Notice he doesn't force himself upon us. What would you have me do for you? He says. Dare we ask for the gift of sight? So will you do it? Will you let the light shine? Will you ask for Jesus to let you see his will, his wish for you? If you let the light of the gospel help you see the world, you'll find a great deal of need and evil. And you'll be called on for a whole lot of love and compassion, humility and contrition. But that is where the miracle happens. For not only do we see the needs of the world, we also see the strong arm of God at work amidst the sorrows. Not only do we see our failings, we also see the strong hands of God loving and supporting us when we do it. And though we still in this life see dimly, already we begin to catch a glimpse of the glorious kingdom beyond. So we come to Jesus. We listen to his question. What do you want me to do for you? And we respond. The scales fall from our eyes and we see the world in a new light. We have not just sight, we now have insight. To all of us, who are open to receive it. Jesus says, in his addressing of our blindness, yours and mine, he says, what do you want me to do for you? And we respond, O Lord, let us see.